Nothing is so fleeting as sporting achievement, and nothing so lasting as the recollection of it.
This is the Couch Talk Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Couch Talk. I'm your host, Subhash Jayaraman, and I'm joined in this episode by former India opener W.V. Raman to talk about his playing career with Tamil Nadu and India, as well as his coaching experiences. Welcome to the show, Coach Raman.
Thank you, Subhash.
Let's start, as they say, at the beginning. For Tamil Nadu, you began in the middle order, bowling left-arm spin. You moved up the order. You know, you debuted as a teenager in 82-83, but then didn't get the national call-up till 88-89. I'm sure after that record-breaking year of 88-89, you expected the call. But were you anticipating call-up to the national team even well before that?
Yeah, well, I started off as a left-arm spinner, and for me to be a regular fixture in the TN side happened only after I played for the country. It is strange in a way, in many respects, because one was that I started off as a loader batsman and played mainly as a left-arm spinner. And then I was in and out of the Tamil Nadu side till 87, 88. And what happened was that in a one-day game at Rajkot, there was a situation where there's a slot open for somebody to bat at three, and Ravi asked me if he would do it because we need somebody to step in here. So without blinking an eye, I said yes, I'll do that. And luckily I had a good knock, and things changed overnight in the sense that I became a batsman overnight, and that was the top level. And after playing for India is when I more or less became a permanent member of the Tamil Nadu side.
So eventually the national call-up for the test, you know, you made your ODI debut and then your test debut, and you get to make the test debut at your home ground in Chepauk. You know, as I was 10, 11, something like that at the time, I remember reading in the newspapers about the ferocity, menace of the West Indian Pacers, including Patrick Patterson. So I know you played them previously in the ODI, but making the test debut against that quality pace attack, but still at your home ground. So what was it, what was going through your mind in terms of preparation and stuff?
Again, my making the debut in that game had a lot of twists and turns. What happened was that during my debut game at Eden Gardens in the one days, Maninder Singh got injured. I do remember he bowled a fabulous spell. He got the wickets of Greenidge and Richards, I think. We were defending a low total. We did that. But he split his web. So there was some time to go for the test match in Chennai. And the feeling was that Maninder would get fit by the time we got to the test match. So fortunately, I was not even in the squad of 14. And so we continued playing the ODI series. The team for the test was announced. I think we went from Rajkot to Ahmedabad there. Once again, Ravi was leading that series, and he called me in Ahmedabad and he said, you'll be prepared to play the test match. So I said, look, I'm not even in the squad. Where and how am I going to get into the 11? He said, you don't worry about that, but you mentally, you know, tell yourself that you're going to play the test match. You've just got runs, you're in good form, and obviously you should be confident. Leave the rest to me. So what had happened was that the team landed in Chennai, and those days you had no mobile phone, so which meant that you needed to communicate through the landlines. That was an achievement by itself then. So the team was in Chennai, and Ravi said, you do one thing, you keep calling me every 2 hours. I'll keep you updated. And in fact, I think I didn't even join the team for practice leading up to the test match. So eventually around maybe 6 or 7 p.m. in the evening, it was decided that Maninder was not going to be fit, and I was going to come into the squad in his place. So Ravi said, it's been decided, you come and check into the hotel now. So I went to the hotel, I checked in, I had no time to think of anything. So So just slept, got up, and went into the game. That was that.
I mean, I guess in some sense, you know, you don't know whether you're playing or not, kind of frees up your mind. But still, you know, you know the conditions because it's your home ground, but you're still walking in a position that you're not used to, obviously, it's because it's a debut, and you're walking in at 38 for two.
I had no time to think about anything, to be very honest, because, you know, I was running, you know, I was obviously, you know, looking to see if I was going to get into the squad and stuff like that. And even prior to that test match, we played a Ranji Trophy game, I do remember I batted somewhere at 7 or 8 for Tamil Nadu in that game. So it was totally different as playing in a one day and succeeding a bit or something. But the test game is totally a different ball game altogether, as everybody knows. And I never had a of mindset of pure top order batsman, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I just walked out to bat. That's about... I did shape well, but I got out. And then I said, okay, there could be a chance of another innings given the nature of the pitch. I said, okay, no matter what, let me go enjoy myself. There are a lot of guys who have spent decades, decade and a half trying to, you know, have the honor of playing for the country. It's not happened to them. Now, here you are. You got in suddenly out of nowhere. Try and, you know, enjoy it. And the only thing in terms of technique I told myself was I was going to just try and leave anything which is not to be played. Apart from that, I don't think I thought of anything. In a way, that helped me because if I'd probably had maybe 36 hours notice or whatever, I might have probably tried to think myself to death.
It is said that the speed of the game, the pace of the game is quite different when you go from first class to international, no matter which country you're going from, you know. Did you also experience that? I mean, obviously, you had some international experience in the limited oversight, but on the test side?
Yeah, it was totally different in the sense that, you know, you're playing against the best of bowlers at that point in time. And here you are, you're thrust out into the deep end. But in a way, it was a bit of a challenge. And also, it was exciting because you're playing for the country, one. Two, you are given a responsible position at the top of the order. And you had the captain backing you. And I don't think you need anything more than that to, you know, to try and give whatever best you can. Yeah, what is totally different was that, you know, the way things happen there. In the sense that in a domestic game, the thing is that you are in a familiar dressing room. You have a lot of familiar faces.
Yeah.
And then you go out, you know, when you got great cricketers, you know, wherever you turn, you got guys who have taken the world by storm, the guys like Kapil Dev, Mohind Ramanath, and why even Ravi for that matter. You have a lot of other guys who have been around for a while. And then you go out into the middle, you're absolutely, you know, unfamiliar with the bowlers. And you're there on your own, you've got to work it out. So the difference is definitely huge. And what I also felt was after coming out at the end of the day's game, not overnight, more than the physical tiredness of it, mentally I was drained.
Wow.
Because the focus levels and the intensity is such that at the top level, I was drained mentally. That was something totally new for me. Of course, I had got runs in the junior level. I had got hundreds and stuff like that. I had got runs in other, let's say, side games and all that. But in a test game, the intensity and the focus that is required is something totally different. And the one thing that I felt was it was mentally draining. That's the only thing, you know, that I can relate to now or I can, you know, explain to you. Otherwise, you know, there's nothing much that I remember because everything happened in such a quick flow.
Yeah.
I had no time to think about anything.
Okay. Okay. Let me just jump ahead, you know, to your, you know, I want to talk more about your playing career, but I want to capture this moment in relation to how you deal with the players now. You know, you've been a coach for a while too. So how does this experience of yours from the late 80s And cricket has changed around the world and especially in India. How does this help you in dealing with your players, whether it's a state sides or now with the Indian national side, women's side? How does that help you in guiding them?
In a way, I think I took up to coaching primarily due to the fact that I felt there's not much of guidance available for us during our playing days. And the fact that a lot of talented cricketers could not really achieve whatever was thought of them to achieve didn't happen. So I think that probably was something which was gnawing at the back of my head. And that's how I got into coaching. And the fact that I started coaching fairly quickly after my retirement, I've been in touch with teams at various levels.
Yeah.
Ensured that, you know, I kept up to date as to what's happening around and how things are changing, how the game is changing, how the mindsets are changing, how the current youngsters look at things, and also the various other things around them which has changed them or which has made them think the way they think. So that way it was not a challenge. So it's all a question of you gaining experience. Along those lines, I've gained a lot of experience because I've been into coaching, what say now, for about close to 2 decades.
Yeah.
And in terms of handling the cricketers today, it's just to try and make them understand that and to release the pressure or try and block the pressure or make them comfortable, you know, in terms of approaching the game mentally. Because it is very important for a coach to absorb the pressure the players go through as much as possible. But of course, there will be pressure for the players. But you try and make them relax, to try and, you know, tell them it's all a case of being excited at the same time relaxed. Because a lot of times things don't work out if people, you know, tend to get a little bit too keyed up. It's always a case of, you know, trying to maintain a bit of a balance.
We'll revisit this, your coaching experiences again, but I want to go back to your debut. It was also Hirvani's debut and he takes a 16 fair. You say you were mentally drained. You get a very good looking 83 in the second innings. You know, India win, you know, it's a historic occasion, your debut, home ground. How are you processing all this as a youngster?
No, it was phenomenal in the sense that, you know, you get to play a game and then you see two more guys, young guys making debut with you. And one of them goes on to equal a world record by picking up 16 wickets. And then you play for the country and the first game that you play, you happen to win against the side, which is formidable.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens on your home ground.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the script couldn't have been better. But again, there again, it is impossible to have that script going all through your life. You know, that is also another thing that you, sometimes people miss out when, you know, when such a sequence of great things happen over a period of 5 days.
Yeah.
I think after that, that was the last game of the series anyway. After that, we had a bit of a break and then we went to Sharjah. So, if it had probably, you know, if we had played two more games, it would have been interesting to see how things panned out after that.
You know, if you look at your test playing career, you know, it's very stop, start kind of thing. One, due to scheduling, how it was, because you play this test in Chepauk and then you don't play for a few months and then you go to West Indies and then you go to New Zealand.
Yeah.
And it's the unrelenting for somebody coming into the international scene because you play the West Indies and then you have to face Richard Hadley and others in their own conditions. I'm guessing you would have liked some more experience, test experiences in home conditions. But looking back on it, how do you see the circumstances panning out for your playing career, test playing career especially?
Yeah, it would have been probably nice if I were to get a run of, let's say, 10 games on the trot or something like that. But the circumstances are such that we had a lot of experienced and acclaimed performers in the batting lineup. And for me, it was a case of catching up of almost 15 odd years, you know, in terms of mentally, in terms of approach and whatnot as a batsman. So it was always a catch-up game for me. It's not that I started playing this game as a frontline batsman, so it would have been an easy, nice, steady progression. But for me, it was all a case of every net session being an important one in terms of trying to figure out, learn things, and pick up on the various nuances of batting to succeed at that level. But there's no way that anybody could be blamed. The long and short of it was that my appearance is sporadic. It had nothing to do with me. It had nothing to do with anybody else. It was perhaps a case of sheer circumstances and the needs of the team then. So that's the way I look at it. And there's no point in sitting back and saying, if that could have happened, this should have happened. And it doesn't really make sense now, or it's not sensible for anybody to keep living in the past and think too much about it.
That's fair. That's fair. You know, India, you know, since Sunil Gavaskar retired in 87 till basically, you know, when Virender Sehwag came along, and were kind of unstable at the opening position, you know, including yourself. There was Vikram Rathore, Ajay Jadeja.
See, that is because, that is because what used to happen in those days was, you see, that's what I said, the entire way people looked at things, the thought process, everything was totally different then. You are always on a short stick. They would say, okay, 2-3 games, maybe. And then suddenly, you know, the decision-making was quick. Because perhaps the selectors felt they are under pressure to show that they are doing the best of jobs possible, whatever it was. But that is how the mindset then was, that how the thought process was. Very few would have got a run of chances. Unless, you know, the numbers kept churning up. But down the line, what has happened is people have realized that, you know, you need to try and give somebody a breather, as it were, you know, by making him play a few number of games in succession so that, you know, it's easy for him to either make it or break it. And even the assessment is also easy. So things have changed. The way things are seen today is different. The things, the way things were viewed at that point was totally different.
I want to talk about your last couple of tests where, you know, you played in South Africa and 96. Yeah. One was that rout in Durban. You had faced West Indies Pacers in India, in West Indies. You have faced Richard Hadlee and the others in New Zealand. Now you're facing South African Pacers led by Alan Donald in South Africa. You have three different types of bowlers almost and different conditions. So what were the challenges for you facing this different varied set of pacers in different conditions?
It is definitely not the easiest of things, that to, you know, especially opening the batting and playing against this array of great fast bowlers. In my case, I had to also deal with the fact that I was a bit handicapped in the sense that I had one lazy eye. Somehow I couldn't get used to wearing contacts or, you know, the proper normal pair of spectacles. So which meant that I was more or less playing with my leading eye more than anything else. So that's why my batting went either that I got out early, or if I had survived the early part of it, I would play long. So at that level, you don't get that leeway, you know. So somehow I had to break through, but in my last series that didn't happen, because by the time, you know, I tried to get to, you know, identify or to focus on the outer half of the ball or the inner of the ball, depending on how the ball was swinging, I was back in the pavilion. Because it's not easy to play fast bowlers of that kind, who are not only quick but also capable of swinging the ball when you have this kind of an issue. But that's the way it was, that's the way I was used to. And also leading up to the series, what happened was, prior to that, for 2 years, I was out of the team or whatever. I was only playing domestic cricket where the pitches were not really quick enough. And also you didn't really get to play the quicks that you get in international cricket at the domestic level.
Yeah.
So it was, so the challenge was compounded by not only that, the cricketing aspect of it, it was also made worse by the fact that I had to deal with this little bit of my problem with the eye. In fact, I played my entire career with this particular little bit of handicap in a way.
Which set of the bowlers? I mean, they're all great bowlers in their own conditions. Was there anything particular about one set or the other that gave you more of a challenge?
See, each one of them are really a handful. And probably I thought the combination of Donald and Schultz was a very good combination. Had probably Brett Schultz played longer, he would have been a real great performer. But unfortunately, that is not to be. Then, of course, you had the West Indies Quakes. You had them in pairs, coming in at pairs. Because probably the late Marshall is easily the quickest and the most lethal. And then you had Richard Adley, who was very, very crafty. He was very accurate. And he had such great control that he could do whatever he wanted and land the ball in the area that he wanted to the closest inch possible. So, each one of them, you know, gave you a different set of problems to handle.
I mean, as you said, you know, you weren't growing up playing cricket to be a top-order batsman, but that's the role that got you into the side, national side. And then you get to face these great bowlers with varied skills. How does all that, combination of all that, how does that allow you to transfer that knowledge to the younger generation of players that you are coaching?
See, in a way, probably we are aware of the kind of mistakes that could happen, or the you know, the pitfalls that the current day cricketers might you know fall into. So we can perhaps you know try and make them realize that what we are trying to tell them is to try and avoid the mistakes that we played, we made rather during our playing days. Not necessarily they should repeat them, and. Also try and tell them about the fact that it is all up to them to try and optimize their potential. And we, sometimes, you know, most of the cases we need to try and tell these cricketers how good they are. Because it's very difficult for them to realize, you know, when they're so focused in wanting to play, perform, all that. They tend to forget as to how good they are. So that becomes a very, you know, important thing. And, also to try and not put pressure on these boys. Because, you know, after battle is all about trying to make them get into a good mind space and be calm about things rather than anything else. So we are only people who are trying to help them in their journey. It's not that we sort of mold them and make them and you know, succeed.
Gotcha.
We are just there to help them, nudge them a little bit. And that's what our jobs are as a coach.
Understood. I want to go back to one of the tests in South Africa at Cape Town.
Yeah.
That passage of play between Sachin Tendulkar and Mohammad Azharuddin, one of the most outrageous, incredible batting that you know I've seen in my time of watching cricket on TV. But what was it like watching it from the dressing room?
I tell you what, you might, you know, think it's a little bit strange, the thing that I'm going to tell you now. I was there sitting there in the dressing room. I didn't play the game. I was watching them back, and it was absolutely, you know, exhilarating to watch. But I didn't realize the high quality of batsmanship that, you know, they displayed on that day. Yes, we knew it was brilliant. But I appreciated that more, what they, how they batted on that particular day, when I saw a repeat telecast of that, about 4 years later. I said, oh my God, I was there. I watched it. I didn't think it was so brilliant. You know, sometimes sitting and watching from the dressing room, when you're also, you know, looking at various other things, you know, your own stuff that you're looking at and, you know, chatting to people and all that, you miss out on the magnitude of the class that is being displayed there. And I said, oh my God, it was too good. You know, it sounds strange, but even I thought it was very strange for me to realize the magnitude of class that was on display that day when I watched it 4 years later. And if I could feel it that way when I was watching it 4 years later, you can imagine how I would have felt watching it live, because, you know, it is like, those guys are just toying around with the bowlers. And it was, you know, so like, it was all a case of them really messing about, you know, creating boundaries for fun at will. Yeah, magnificent, absolutely magnificent.
Obviously, when you watch it on TV, the views that you get are very different from what you get, you know, sitting 100 yards or so away. But you get the whole picture of the ground. What was it that really astounded you about that? You know, I'm really curious.
What was astounding was the fact that, you know, it was all looking far too easy the way they were doing it. You know, Alan was running it hard, you know, trying to really blast them out, and these two guys, you know, casually, you know, messing about, trying to, you know, creaming it through cars or, you know, flicking it to the onside. And it didn't look like, you know, it was a contest at all. It was totally one-sided the way these guys dominated the South African attack. And mind you, until then, it was not seen during that inning, during the series.
Yes.
And when you saw something like that, you felt, oh, what the hell is going on here? And which meant that it was probably a longer series. You know, of course, I think we did have four test matches there. And if there was one more game to go, it would have been interesting again to see how these guys would have, you know, gone after them. And I thought the people at the ground were absolutely shocked out of their heads the way these guys are batting. Even though, you know, they really appreciated and they all felt, you know, it was their money's worth and stuff like that. But yeah, they couldn't believe that their attack could be creamed like that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
That was the best part about it. You know, it was too sort of, you know, incredible for all of them. They might have felt that, you know, they were living a dream.
Your one international century also came in the same country, but in the earlier tour, 92. Not seen that innings since seeing it on TV. What do you recall from that accomplishment?
See, we needed to win the game because, you know, we had lost the earlier three games, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And leading up to the game, it was a little bit of irritation in a way, because I was batting well. I was going to 20s and 30s. I knew that there's something. Something has to come now. Something big has to happen. And as I recall it, the entire series was made up of low scoring games when you compare it to the one day scores you get now.
Mm-hmm.
220, 230 scores have really sort of hard fought and won. So even this game is 214, 215, and this was a real hard track. And quite obviously, they wanted to finish the series in that game.
Mm-hmm.
If they won that game, they would have won the series there itself. And we, on our part, we were hanging in desperate to stay in the series. So I decided now, I when I walked out to bat, I said, no, come on, this could be the night where, you know, you break out of that 30 zone. And we got off to a decent start, and we realized, you know, if we all hang in there and, you know, go about our jobs, contribute a little bit, it'll all happen. But still, in the end, it was a tight one until Ravi went and played a cameo and, you know, got us past the line.
But, you know, you ended up scoring, what, more than 50% of the team total, 114 out of 220. Getting an international century is always precious, you know, it's a incredible moment. What were you thinking, you know, as like, okay, I have arrived on the scene, or still got a ways to go?
I never ever, for some reason, or as things stand out, I never was ever sure of being a certainty. I do remember I did tell one journalist after the run, he asked me the same question that you asked me now. He asked me, do you think now you're going to be a regular? He said, no, I can't say for sure. So his second question was, how do you say that? How can you even think like that? You got 100 here and under tough conditions. I said, you never know. And as it turned out, two games after that, I was dropped. So that's the way it went. So I have no regrets about all this.
Things happen.
You carry on. You don't sit on something that's happened 1 week ago. Get on with it. And that way life is easier.
Fair enough. I want to talk a bit about your coaching career so far. You know, after your retirement from first class cricket, you know, you took the grade 3 level coaching course in Australia, and you progressed to be the coach for the Tamil Nadu Ranji side as well as the Bengal side later on. During this period, as you are going through the steps of becoming a coach, etc., and then being a coach, the cricket itself, the landscape is changing. You know, the profusion of a lot more limited over games, advent of T20s, and then the IPL. So, as a player from, you know, the immediately preceding generation that had different ideas, concepts of batting approaches, and then to be a coach for players, up-and-coming players, that are growing in this environment, what kind of changes were you seeing in the players themselves, in their approaches to the game, batting, etc., and what kind of challenges does it pose to you as the coach?
It will not pose a big challenge as long as you're aware and recognize the fact that each person is a product of his environment and his upbringing. You know, for example, when I say that, I mean that immediately after us, we had the Dravids and the Lakshmans and whatnot. They were also brought up into playing the conventional way, into playing long and ensuring, you know, that they sort of did not play too many adventurous shots. But over a period of time, what happened was when this quantum of one-day cricket started getting, you know, more increased, then people had to adapt to this format as well. Then when the T20 started coming, when it came in, now everything broke loose. And that is a format where you can't really take any kind of time.
Yes.
At best, you can probably, you know, 2-3 deliveries. Otherwise, you'll have to keep go. So now, you have to understand that after the generations after the Lakshmans and the Dravids and all that, in a way, they are brought up in an atmosphere where they are looking to hit everything. So as long as you realize, you know, the conditions under which they have been brought up, you will not really have any issues. You will recognize the fact that these guys have been brought up this way. And you also, within their framework, try and see how best they can adapt to all the formats that they play in.
As a coach, you know, obviously you were, you worked in the IPL as well, batting coach, batting consultant, and also you're being a Ranji level coach at the time. How do you, you know, handle that? You know, because the demands of the sport are different, demands on the players are different. So, you know, is there more hands-on approach when you're doing first class versus a little bit more hands-off approach when you're dealing with IPL? How does it work?
No, it is obviously, you know, a sort of long-drawn process when you are handling a stateside right through the season. It stretches over 8 months. And then, you know, there's a nice, easy, decent sort of tempo that is built up. But if you're talking about the IPL, there will be a lot of emotional highs and lows. So that is what that needs to be addressed in an IPL format. Because players coming together 1 week before a order because they're all busy with their internet program and whatnot, and people from different levels of the group. So it's basically a question of once they start getting the games going, it's sort of emotional roller coaster ride that they go through. So this is where you try to come out because it's a high profile tournament. People want to do well. And there's also a lot of money at stake, and things can go, you know, go through their minds. So you try and, you know, alleviate all that, try and, you know, sift all that out, try and, you know, help them get these unwanted things in their heads out of the system.
I want to ask about the batting slash hitting approaches itself. How has it progressed? You know, you watched it evolve, change over time. After your playing career, I mean, from your playing career and then playing career ended and then becoming coach, etc. You know, you have seen it progress over the years, a change over the years. How would you describe that evolution or change in batting techniques and approaches, say, from 2007 to current day, 2019?
Yeah, basically, it's a case of the mindset changing the technique, or, you know, mindset dictating as to how they go about out in the middle. Because if you looked at the one-day format even in the 70s, 80s, maybe, you know, just early 80s, you would have the two slips in the gully in place, and even the batters would not go over the top, you know. That's basically coming from the mindset. Now, today, the batsmen, you know, go out looking to really whack the ball.
Yeah.
They're not going to, you know, potter around at the crease. They're going to just go try and dominate. Because if you look at it, they play more of the shorter version, let it be domestic cricket or international cricket.
Sure.
What is it? Is it a case of, let's say, both the ODA and T20 put together vis-a-vis a test match? Is it 1-6 or what's the ratio?
Something like that, yeah.
So, something like that. So, which means that they play more of the format where they need to go and, you know,
mm-hmm.
keep getting runs as soon as they get in. So, that is a mindset. And a lot of guys, you know, guys like Virat Kohli and various others who play all the three formats, they piped on a little bit when they get into the duration format, and then they manage it. So, it's essentially a case of the mindset. And the interesting thing is that, with a lot of shorter format being played, the T20 and the phenomenal IPL, you know, which is obviously attracting eyeballs across the world, and everybody wants to be a part of it, they would obviously try and adapt their mindset and the way they approach things to try and be a part of that, and also try and maybe, you know, get into the national sides as well. By being good at the shorter formats. And it's also, we also come to an era where now we have the white ball and the red ball contracts these days. So the options are more for the cricketers as against what they were, let's say a few decades ago. It was just one format of cricket and there was no sort of specialist cricketers. Perhaps one or two would be different tests to one day cricket. Now, you might have a situation, or you are having situations where even the sides are totally different when it comes to the white ball and the red ball.
Yes, true. You then have become the head coach of the Indian National Women's Team. You know, looking from the outside as a non-player and not having played in any reasonable level, I could see obviously the pace of the game is different. The strategies are different. So, you know, you grew up in one format of the game, so to speak, and coached in that, and then transitioning to this, how do you adjust your approach to how the game is played?
So you have to realize that the pace of play is definitely not going to be the same as you would have in men's cricket.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, you need to realize that you need to assess whatever it is that they're doing vis-a-vis the women's side from some other nation.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't be trying to compare what these women cricketers are doing to men cricketers.
Gotcha.
That is not the right way to go about it. So, but eventually, or if you bring it down to one particular line as to what it's all about, at the end of the day, the common denominator is cricket. Get runs, score, take wickets, win the games. And the tactics or the technique or whatever is not too different. It's just that the pace of play is different. That's about it. Otherwise, I don't see too much of a difference.
I mean, that's a very valid point that you cannot compare women's cricket to men's cricket, and because those are essentially two different sports, so to speak. That's like comparing test cricket to T20, essentially different sports. Within the Indian women's side itself, you know, you have the younger generation with Harmanpreet, Smriti Mandhana, and Jemima Rodrigues. There seems to be a change in the batting methods, approaches, compared to, say, you know, somebody like a legendary Mithali Raj, and, you know, when in her era, so to speak. What do you attribute that change, evolution in batting approach to within the Indian women's game?
See, because they get to see a lot of, international cricketers, looking to be attacking all the time, looking to be aggressive. And once again, when you watch, let's say, about 70 odd shorter format games to 10 test matches in a year. Now, where is it that you are going to be really focused? You know, and anyway, let's face it, in women's cricket, they only play the ODIs and T20s. So, it is something, you know, that is expected for them to look to be more aggressive, the current generation or the future generations, because they play the shorter formats. Whereas those days, maybe they played a bit of duration cricket, test cricket in women's cricket also. But it's only natural that the, you know, the current day cricketers or the future cricketers of the future, even in women's cricket, will look to be more aggressive and, you know, they'll be looking to whack the leather of the ball.
Gotcha. Where does the Indian setup sit in the grand scheme of women's cricket itself? How would you evaluate their current position and where do you think it is going?
Another 3 years, give these girls another 3 years, they'll dominate the world. Because a lot of things have been different when you're talking about India and other countries, because those girls have the advantage of playing multi-sports in their schools and universities. Now here, that doesn't happen for various reasons. Nobody can be blamed for that. And the physical structure is different, the genetics are different. But despite all the shortcomings that are prevailing, the girls have done wonderfully well in the last 2-3 years. So which means that if things are done properly, things are planned, and if they're given the right kind of exposure, they're made to play more international cricket, you know, in the coming years, I'm sure these girls will dominate in 2-3 years. Yeah, they are going to be playing, you know, more international cricket in the coming years. You know, the ICC is also driving women's cricket now. They also gotten the championship stuff into women's cricket as far as the ODIs are concerned. So, definitely, things will improve. The individuals improve because four of our girls went and played in the Kia Super League. And that kind of exposure is going to be immensely beneficial. If you look at even Smriti and Harman, them playing in different leagues is, you know, exposed them to a lot of things that would not have happened otherwise. They also become better players. They, you know, they look at the entire way of approaching a game differently. And they know how the other cricketing nations operate as far as cricket is concerned. That way it's helped them a lot. And definitely a lot more girls will be, you know, playing in various places. If that is obviously, you know, something that is allowed, they will be doing it.
Got it. On that note, Coach, thank you so much for being on the show, and I wish you and your team all the very best.
Thanks a lot, Zubat. Thanks a lot.